following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Corolla Classics is brought to you by Blinds Galore. Blinds Galore's huge Black Friday sale starts this week. And that's when you can get up to 50% off custom blinds and shades. It's one of their biggest sales of the year. So head to BlindsGalore.com today for 50% off during their Black Friday sale. BlindsGalore.com, they help give any room an incredible makeover with custom blinds, shades, or shutters. And they have it all. You can do it all from home. Just take your measurements and customize online with BlindsGalore.com's new Build-A-Blind tool. You'll even be able to see exactly how your blind or shade will look on screen before you buy. I've seen these blinds. They're at Dr. Drew's house or at Adam's house, and their windows look so good. Plus, this is a family-owned and run company, and they've been doing this for over 20 years, and they truly want you to love your view. This is what you do. Tell them, Gio.
Blinds Galore makes it easy to get the custom blinds and shades you've always wanted in your home, especially during their huge Black Friday sale when you can get 50% off. Go check out BlindsGalore.com. Let them know I sent you. That's BlindsGalore.com.
Hello and welcome back to Corolla Classics for November 27th, 2021. Hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving weekend. We got some great clips of the Adam Carolla Show lined up for you. My name's Chris Loxamana. I'm the executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Corolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Hey, Chris. I want to say I'm thankful for you, my friend, and belated happy birthday, because we didn't acknowledge it before your birthday.
It's all right. But I'm thankful for you, too, Joe, and I'm thankful for everybody who is listening to this show and just and supports us. So thanks to all of you out there, too. Before we get going to the first clip, I want to remind everybody, if you want to submit a clip request, it's real easy. You just email us, classics@adamcarolla.com. Send us your favorite moment. We'll go find it for you, and we'll play it for the world. Also, you can find us on Instagram at Giovanni Giorgio or at Chris Loxamana 1, and let us know what you want to hear on Corolla Classics. Let's kick this one off with a Thanksgiving clip. Thanksgiving of 2010, we did a show with Adam's dad, Jim Carolla, and Bald Brian in studio, and Jim brought the trumpet.
Yeah, it's an unusual episode. It's very similar to a Thanksgiving episode they did in 2007 on the KLSX morning show when Bonaducci was unfortunately on board. And despite his presence, it was a great full morning of audio of Jim Carolla in studio with the trumpet, old stories, talking about the bus crash with his dad. There's a lot of stuff fans never heard before. And they didn't really do the same exact thing in 08. They didn't get a chance to do one on the radio show in 09. And the podcast in 09 was a different format. So it was almost like they were testing the waters with this one. It's like cranberry sauce recipes, part of it. It's a whole thing. And so today on Saturday, we're giving you Adam Carolla Show 454 featuring Jim Carolla and Brian Bishop. It's from 11-23-2010, aired on the 25th. It's the ACS Thanksgiving Show, Part 1. Enjoy these leftovers.
Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Good day, Bald Brian.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, good day. Dad. Dad's here and he's brought his horn. Dad, yeah. Were you confused by the drop of your own voice? Play the one that everyone thinks is you saying, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, I've tried to tell people that the phrase hell yeah has never passed your lips.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Is that me?
Have you ever said the phrase hell yeah regarding anything?
I don't, not that I remember.
I mean, even when the Eagles yes. scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl in 1977, did you say hell yeah?
I don't remember.
I've never seen you pump your fist or go, hell yeah, or God damn, that's right, or high fives all the way around.
Uh-huh.
Not you, right?
No, I've done that. Yeah.
You said hell yeah?
I mean, I've pumped my fist, and I was glad the team scored. And I get very excited about it.
Back when Red Grange scored for the old Washington Senators in 1931. But, I mean, Dad, you're not a demonstrative guy. I try to explain to people you did not say hell yeah. You said, yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's not you saying hell yeah.
That voice that's saying that, you're saying it's not me?
Well, no, it is you.
Uh-huh.
But you never said, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
You said, yeah. You were saying, yeah. But you've been saying, hell yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. I try to explain to strangers that you don't say, hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I might have said, hell yeah.
Man. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think so.
All right.
Hell yeah.
I'm just saying, I've known you for 46 years. I've never seen you or heard you say, hell yeah. Hey, Dad, you want to feel old?
Hell yeah.
Your youngest son is going to put reading glasses on to do a spot for Jeremiah Weed.
Oh, great.
Yeah. This Turkey Day, Jeremiah Weed reminds you to forget about the old-fashioned Southern tradition and focus on the new turducken, or turducken, I should say. How do you do the turducken? Very easy. You prepare it with Jeremiah Weed. How does that work? Jesus Christ, I have no idea, but it sounds delightful.
Can you imagine that?
Oh, this is why the terrorists hate us. We took an owl and stuffed it into a turkey.
A bourbon-soaked three-bird.
Oh, my God. John Madden would go insane. Visit Jeremiah Weed's Facebook page and find out all about the world-famous Jeremiah Weed turducken recipe. Either way, love me some Jeremiah Weed, and thank you. Yes, especially that cherry mash, my favorite. 90 proof. The wife likes the vodka that's got iced tea vodka, nothing better. And good people, good folks, spend some time with them, and hell of a product. So Jeremiah Weed, and again, check out that turducken. Just go to Facebook at Jeremiah Weed and check it out. All right. Geez, I don't know where I should start. Should I start complaining?
Why wait?
All right. I remind me to talk about The Soup, which is a show I was supposed to do today that I didn't do. Not today, Thanksgiving. We taped this the day before. But, Dad, let's talk about you for a second. What was Thanksgiving like for you back in the day?
Let's see. When we were talking about the group that came over from Sicily, well, we all kind of ended up in a very small neighborhood, barely on the 15th Street in South Philadelphia. Most of the families were there in Paisan, so within that one street, maybe two, there were all these people, folks from overseas. And what would happen in all different people's houses, the aunts, my father, there were five sisters, and my father was the only male. And these were women that were great cooks, and they would make mostly not so much turkey, I would say. It's like an Italian, let's see what you call it. It's like a brujol.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of beef rolled up with a stuffing inside.
Yeah, sure, brujol. And they do that fish that I can't think of the name of right now. That's sort of a
bacala.
Bacala, where they do the bacala. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, so they do a sort of Italian feast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened, Dad? I'm very curious about this, because you grew up in a traditional environment around people that cooked and cooked well, as you just mentioned. Yet, as an adult, you seemed to shun women that cooked or had no interest in it yourself. I mean, like, I remember dinner growing up, you'd have some cottage cheese with some raisins in it and like a little honey on top. Well, most guys, you know, they want some pot roast or some potatoes or, you know, for dinner. And I mean, not we weren't camping, and it wasn't breakfast time. For dinner, a lot of guys want a steak. You know what I'm saying? Or even if they're trying to eat healthily, they still want some chicken breast or some fish or something. You're always a guy that seemed to just eat, like, granola with some cottage cheese. and a little stream water on there. And I thought, what is weird? You had no sort of eating requirements.
Hell yeah.
Is that accurate?
Well, I'm really thinking of it now. I ate lighter as I got older.
But you never said, like, we're going out for a steak.
No, not steak, no.
Or anything, really. Like, we never went out. We're going out. We're eating big tonight.
Uh-huh.
I bust my ass this week.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I kind of...
Why not? Were you not hungry?
Yeah, I was hungry, but I kind of learned, I guess, to make do with what was there. And.
But there wasn't anything there. That's what I'm trying to explain.
Well, do you mean when we were in the family or when I was on my own?
I just mean, like, in general, you managed to somehow steer away from dinner. Like, saying, you know, we're going out, we're eating, I'm firing up the barbecue. Did you ever fire up a barbecue?
Very rarely.
Very rarely? Did you own a barbecue?
Well, somewhere down the line.
A lot of people have, they love it.
Mm-hmm.
They love to eat. They love to go out. They love to eat. You're not that person,
no,
right?
No, not really. I'd rather be home.
Not eating, though, right?
Yeah, let's take tonight. For example, I was alone. Lynn was out. Her family's in from Portland, and she picked him up at the airport, and I was pretty much by myself. Thinking, well, what shall I eat tonight? Occurred to me, and this is what I decided. I looked in the refrigerator, and there was some bologna, and a couple slices of tarragon. Bread.
Yeah, you made a sandwich.
I made a sandwich, and had a little leftover spaghetti from the night before, and I heated that up, and a couple of graham crackers.
Graham crackers.
Yeah,
right, doesn't mean you. It's sort of like what a raccoon would do if he got into the house. But I mean, you never went like, "Hey, man, we're eating Chinese and we're doing it tonight. I want some of that sweet and sour duck, you know, or whatever." It was always just kind of to survive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's just to survive, but what I ate, I liked. Even if it was granola or. Hamburger. I don't really eat hamburgers.
Not a passion of yours.
Yeah, right. And, yeah, food is, in particular as I get older, it's more so. There's not a strong special interest in it. I mean, I like something good, and I make something for myself sometimes. But I like scrambled eggs, and in other words, I'm eating more simply as I get older.
Oh, no, Dad. This has been going on for a while now. You may think this is something that's just come on.
Well, it's going, whatever it is, going further then.
Yeah. You're going to have I'll have a bowl of dust and a melted ice cube. You know, you're about 5 years away from that. And that's dinner. Right. That's Thanksgiving. So my dad managed to marry women that sort of shared his disdain for food. Or at least something. I don't know what happened, Dad, but how did you come from that place where all that food was going around and all the women were in the kitchen cooking and all the Italian food to, I'll have some tarragon and some non-fat cottage cheese?
Mm-hmm. Now, I also at that time weighed 240 pounds.
So maybe there was an issue there.
Yeah. I mean, in other words, I was encouraged to eat, and I was eating a lot, and I was getting obese, and it took me a lot of years to get the eating thing even down to a way that I wouldn't be overeating and gaining weight and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know this, by the way?
That he was fat?
Yeah,
I knew he was fat. The idea that somebody sort of broke you of your, and your relationship with food and early on is good, but it didn't pay dividends for me. I like to eat. That's what happened. And I could never figure out what the hell was going on, because I always felt like somehow you never had that relationship with dinner. Like, it was, I never saw you eat bacon and scrambled eggs or say, like, I want a lumberjack stack of pancakes for breakfast or something. It was always just, like, little bits and pieces here and there. It mm-hmm. seemed like, it never seemed like food was your thing. My curse was I was never not hungry. And, Dad, I think you were always full or something. I don't know what the hell was going on. And then my dad married two women that essentially didn't cook, but he wasn't into it, so it was a match made in heaven, right?
Well, Lynn cooks.
Lynn goes to Gelson's for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you're just talking about Thanksgiving.
Well, but I'm saying general, that ain't cooking. I mean, that's not a... Someone who loves cooking goes nuts on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, she's made a few, but no. But if you talk about food in general, nightly food,
yeah,
Lynn is, I mean, she buys takeout thing, but she's very tasteful. I mean, she buys good takeout food, and So I mean, that's no problem with Lynn as far as cooking. But she's not a cook in a sense of she could if she really wanted to, and from time to time has cooked Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah,
but not all. Not
I went to one year when I went over to their house for Thanksgiving. I went to the Gelson's and bought a turkey breast because Dad had got a honey baked ham, and I wasn't down with that. I like turkey.
Honey baked ham is fine, but no bird in addition to that.
No bird.
Ooh.
No bird. Just a honey baked ham.
The ham and the bird together are fine, but the bird must be there.
Bird must be there. And then another time we went to Vince and Pat's. I brought my own cranberry sauce. Because I was not going with the canned shit that Pat was digging out of a can, but Dad, am I nuts or am I right?
Well, you tend to jump to conclusions. You get some kind of half facts down, and you really build something on that. For example, you don't think I'm a sports fan. You don't think if you would see me watching a Clippers game on a Monday night and seeing me jumping out of the chair, that poor team that never wins a game.
You like the Clippers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really rooting for them and so on. And there's a whole... you don't know a part of me that likes sports, that watches sports.
I played sports for 10 years. You never liked sports.
Oh, no, but that was... You assumed that. No, I always liked sports.
All right. Yeah. I never knew it.
Yeah.
We never discussed it.
Yeah, were you up to what was going on as far as, like, the NBA in the early days? Were you following any of that stuff?
I was playing football. We never had a discussion. Yeah. We never talked about it, really.
Well, I don't know if we never talked about football.
It wasn't really a topic. I just assume you didn't like it.
Oh, no. I've been hooked on sports ever
on
since.
On football? Not football.
Football. Yeah, every sport. I mean, basketball
it's
mostly.
It's getting worse now.
Baseball. I followed the old athletics when I was a kid, when Connie Mack ran the athletics at Shide Park in Philadelphia.
But you like football on the pro level, not anything lower than that.
Right. That's right. More on the pro.
Well, they cleared it up. Okay. All right. Well, if it got to the show, maybe that would have done something.
The only thing worse than not caring at all, I was like, I was a big football fan back then. Didn't feel much like talking to you about it.
Dad, we didn't talk. We didn't have any real football-related discussions. I mean, past an eighth grade or something.
I don't know. I mean, if you remember it that way, I don't.
All right.
I don't know.
I could have. I may have gotten a scholarship to play football somewhere at some point. I'll work that out. All right, Dad, tell us, this is a shock to me that you're a big sports fan.
Yeah.
and a Clippers fan, too.
A Clippers fan. Why the Clippers, Dad?
I don't know. But I got onto them early, and I haven't been able to get rid of them. But did you see the game? The last night game?
No, nobody saw that game. You were the only person that saw the game.
They played New Orleans 11-1 and they're 1-13.
Oh, Bill Simmons saw the game. Yeah,
he's a season ticket holder.
Yeah,
and it was a great game. It was very exciting.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And who's your football team?
Well, of course, for years it was the Eagles. I grew up in Philadelphia, and we used to go on Sundays.
Sure.
The Eagles was my team.
You know the name of the North Hollywood football team?
The bear? No, that's a dog.
Ooh.
Wait a minute.
What?
I can picture it. The Hollywood Hounds? No. Hollywood, I can see a picture of it, but I can't. The Bulldogs or something?
That's close enough. All right, I'm just checking.
Okay.
All right, so Dad, let's talk about your family growing up.
Okay.
Let's talk about Thanksgiving. What that meant to you. You guys would go out, you'd have the big feast, and then at a certain point, you come out here to Southern California. You get married, and then what's Thanksgiving turn into?
Well, the California Thanksgiving all had to do with Chris and her parents. It seems like we had it at her house a lot.
You went Lotsie to the grandparents' house.
Grandparents' house.
Yeah.
Lotsie and Helen. I didn't really have any family. I had Vince. I had a cousin of Vince. And sometimes we went there. But mostly Lotsie and Helen really stand out.
At the grown-ups table and at the kids table.
How would I know that?
my mom. Dad, you hear that voice?
Oh, boy.
Dad, play a couple of those. Let's hear it.
How should I know? How would I know that?
Yeah.
How can you possibly expect me to answer that?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Really brings up some feelings, huh?
Yeah.
You hear that voice?
Mm-hmm.
That's after 30 years of therapy. That's not when you had her, Pops.
Right.
Play that first one more time.
All right.
How would I know that?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Why?
She should have had a flag made up and flown it over the house that said, how could I know that?
How would I know that?
You know what that was, Dad? Do you know what that game was? We played, I think the first year we were on the radio, we played a little trivia with her. And we asked her questions. She played Damashek's. You don't know who Damashek is, do you?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
How do you know Damashek?
I remember him from the radio show.
Wow. Played Damashek's mom, who lived out of state, played Chris in a trivia competition. And every single question that was asked of her was, how could I? Nobody would. And then Damashek's mom would give the answer a beat and a half later.
Would I know that?
Never quite seemed right. Yeah, did you ever ask her a question that she ever answered?
She must have answered, so not that I can think of any. But.
I asked her one time, I said, how much does my stepdad John make a year? And she said,
how should I know?
I said, I'm rich. I don't want any money. I'm a rich guy, but I'm just ballpark, just curious.
How would I know that?
But just, is it 50 grand or is it 100 grand?
How would I know that?
I was just like, you don't know how much your husband of 20 years makes a year?
How should I know?
I was just like, Mom, I'm not asking down to the penny, and I'm not a junkie who needs to, I'm trying to get some money off you. I'm a rich guy.
How can you possibly expect me to answer that?
Just give me a ballpark. Like, no way. Now, here's the question. Lying or doesn't know? What do you think, as a psychologist?
I think she doesn't know.
She doesn't know. How much her husband of 20 years in a job that he's been at for 35 years makes when he is the sole income provider for the house? Do you think she doesn't know?
You know, there's a chance she may not know. Yeah, that never came up.
What's worse, lying or not knowing?
How would I know that?
So you think, no, if you're a gambling man.
Could be. It could be that it was never said, she never asked, and he never.
But don't they have to fill out paperwork? Doesn't she have to sign, you know, the taxes, tax returns and stuff?
I don't know. How would I know?
How should I know?
Yeah, fountain of information. So you came out here, and we toggle between Helen and Lotsie's place. and also the Bruno's place, your right. cousin,
right,
Vince,
right.
What happened with Vince? What was there something in the drinking water or something? Like, what was Vince is a laid back guy. I like Vince a lot, but Vince had this old world sort of Italian. I don't feel like working. Kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. was there some cultural thing? Was your dad this way? Whereas, like, the ladies worked and the guys played pinochle. Well, Vince seemed to come from that.
Yeah, I think Vince early rebelled against being put into the system of the tailor shop, and you know where. Remember,
he didn't rebel against his wife going to work every day.
No, I don't.
You
yeah.
have such a problem with that.
I don't think he had any problem with that. But I don't know. He's generally, though, and here he early started to, like, tend bar, and do things on weekends. And he had one period where he worked, what was that? And he worked at some large market in Philadelphia.
But he decided it wasn't for him early on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then he's gotten by, and his wife.
Pat, well, he hasn't gotten by. She got by.
Well,
for him.
They did it together.
Right. They did it together like somebody pushes the car and the other guy steers.
Well, she would have to agree to it. I mean,
okay.
She didn't want him to work.
But was your dad that way at all?
Well, my father really tried to make it as a musician and didn't work a day job. This was like in the 30s, in my growing up. It was a terrible depression. Nobody was working, but he wouldn't have worked anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Why wouldn't he have, what do you mean he wouldn't have worked?
I mean,
he didn't
have a craft that he would do. The only thing he knew was that trombone and playing the trombone. He didn't have any skill or anything else. And my mother was a hard-working woman, worked in the sweatshops, and until the war, so the 30s were generally terrible. I was using that term the other day, sheriffed out. I don't know if they use that.
Sheriffed out? Yeah, sheriffed out.
Sheriffed out, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Moore knows how that works. Yeah, that sheriffs show up and evict you, essentially.
Yeah, because you run out of money. And in fact, that was a line that was used all the time. You know, we're going to be sheriffed out unless we can do that.
It's now gay slang, Dad.
What? No gay slang?
It's now gay slang, by the way. Brian will tell you after the show exactly what it entails.
Better yet, I'll show you.
Better yet. But don't empty that spit valve yet, old man.
It defies words in description.
Yes. So sheriffed out. So was there tough times back in South Philly? But is there a thing that I've noticed, not so much with our family, but I've noticed, is there a cultural Italian thing where the guys kind of hang back and let the ladies do the cooking and the cleaning and the sweatshopping?
No.
Did your dad have some of that?
Well, my father, remember, was really, he didn't grow up in the usual sense of going into the tailor shops early, learning a trade, and he skipped that through me. I mean, he worked a little bit at that time. He didn't work very much during the Depression period. WPA he was on, I think. He did something. I think he did music in the WPA, where they would have...
What's the WPA?
It was something Roosevelt. What's it stand for? The
Works Progress Administration.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, it was part of that system or part of that.
Right.
Yeah, but he would play.
Yeah.
He was a morale booster.
Yeah, that's right. Something like that. And in fact, then the only time there's during the war, let's see, in the 40s, things opened up for us because then my mother went into the making uniforms, and I was working overtime and a lot. And my father, and I'm just remembering now, I think it's the first time he's ever been actually going in the daytime, but things were so bad, they needed people so bad to go into those, I'm trying to think of the name of the, Baldwin's.
Locomotive work?
Yeah, the big locomotives.
Or the brothers.
Well, the big locomotives work. Anyway, they switched over from engines to tanks.
Right.
So that was a period where he worked in Eddystone.
Your dad had a gig
Right.
The war broke out, essentially, and got your dad employed.
Right.
But then the war ended.
Right. And that's when he worked, like, in the parts department, but they played the marches at the lunchtime to keep the morale up and all of that.
What, do you think your dad was a philanderer? Do you think he had a couple ladies on the side?
I think so. I don't know for sure, but I think so. I think a woman in particular, I think he did.
And was he sort of, like I said, like he'd sort of like to, not quite, it wasn't on the grift, but he was like kind of doing his own thing a little bit?
Yeah.
You wouldn't call him a great family man?
No, he did his thing. He hung out with musicians, and he always wore a suit. In the world that I came from, the men were all, going to the factories. But he always had a suit on from the moment he got up in the morning. He got up in the morning and put on a suit. It was really, and he would go to the union, the musicians' union, and would hang out with different leaders and so on, trying to get to work. And so he would come home like 4 or 5 o'clock. He might put on the water for the pasta. My mother worked in a factory, and she had to walk home, and she never took any transportation.
Didn't want to spend the money.
I think so. And the way that it was worked out, that it might have been better even to walk through side streets and where the factories were, wasn't kind of on a main thoroughfare.
She got home and she cooked him dinner, right?
Yeah. She would do something. I mean, she'd prepare something the night before or something. And that'd be the first time that our little family, and we were small, well, most of the Italian families were large, was only 3 boys. And that's because my mother and father had a lot of problems, too, and were really struggling to stay together. So we had a small family, and that's the time we'd get together.
You'd eat, and then what? You wouldn't do any homework, would you?
No, I didn't. No, I was really struggling, and I didn't do homework. We lived in a very trying to recall this for a moment. We lived on the third floor of my father's sister's house. There were like 12 or 17 of us in the house, so that was our first place.
I'm just laughing because every time you get some guy who's basically doing the sort of reparations for slavery sort of stuff, I just start laughing. Like, believe me, the Corollas did not, we didn't own, you didn't have any plantations or any slaves or any, how many people did you own back in the day? How many yards? Just in acres, actually. Right. Square footage, we couldn't tally all that. Lived on the third floor of a piece of shit, right? With a bunch of other people.
Right.
Yeah.
And the families mixed together. My brothers lived down with my cousins, and I had a crib, made for a very young child, and I was 32 by then.
Dating.
And I couldn't, the crib, my feet were out the bottom of it, but that's the only bed that
But
had,
and eventually you guys moved into a place that was your own, right?
Yeah, now that, we found a tiny house then. To my knowledge, our first real, it was very small.
Yeah.
And when we moved, we're moved by horse and wagon. And that might,
wow.
That might be the, that might really, there was a fellow in the corner that owned a little chicken store, and he had a horse and wagon. That's what he would use. And we'd asked him, because he would do it for $5 or something, if he could move our furniture, a little bit that we had. He said, yeah, and I remember him out front while we were loading things and the horses, 2 horses he had. And the horses clicked to the next house.
I remember, I don't know what year your mom passed away, early 80s?
83.
Your mom passed away. Did you fly back for that?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Seemed extravagant for some reason, but your mom passed away. And I remember her house was, bought and paid for. And in 83, there was this crazy sort of real estate boom out here that was houses all of a sudden that were selling for 40, 50, 60,000 were selling for 110, 125,000 $130,000. I didn't have much to build it on, but I was just doing a kind of a math, which is somebody had a house that's completely paid for and they just died. You got to whack it up with a couple of your brothers, but hell, that means 40, 50 grand is coming our way. The house sold, I think the house sold for like $17,000.
Yeah, exactly.
That was in 1983. Yeah. That under $20,000, yes?
Three-story house, yeah.
Three-story house, well under $20,000 in the 80s. So couldn't have been doing too good over there.
Well, we paid, during the war again, I have one brother, my youngest brother went into the war. Ralph, you got those sabers from him.
Japanese sabers, yeah.
Yeah, remember him. Anyway, during the war, while he was away, we had a relative, a paisan, that was in real estate. In that house I stole for 17, we paid $4,500 for
it. In what year?
During the war, so 44, 45, 43.
Well, and by the way, you want to talk about the entrepreneurial spirit. That's why the Corollas are rich. 4,000 in 43, but in 83, almost $17,000.
I mean,
enough to buy a fairly nice used car. A very nice used car.
Fairly nice.
And only 40 years later, too. So, I mean, you're talking about, you do that. You do that 8-10 times over the course of a lifetime, you have 60 grand in the bank.
That's a lot of used cars.
So now, what relatives do I have? Because I don't know. You have Ralph, and you have Mario. Both your brothers are deceased. Mario has a kid. Ralph never had a kid, right?
Right.
So, and Mario has one girl,
Maria.
But just one girl.
Right.
So with not a lot of productivity going on here with the family. It's weird. Mom's an only child.
Yeah.
As far as I know. She doesn't know her biological dad. I don't know if he had any other kids or whatever, half somethings or whatever. So you have to sort of picture this. There's Maria, who's living on the East Coast.
Yeah, lives in New Jersey. Incidentally, she was trying to work something out where she would come in and see you when you were in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was only there for about 11 hours or something like that. So you have three brothers and you're three Italian, I mean, all together. Yeah. There's three. You have two brothers, two full-blooded Italian brothers, and between the two of them, they have one daughter. Mm. And then you have a son and a daughter, and then that's it with the Corollas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, better hope that kid of mine don't go gay. That's it? Are there no other Corollas?
No. I don't think there's any Corollas left that I know of. No. Yeah, that is. Well, first off, with Ralph, His wife made it clear early that there would be no children. So he wanted them. So that was over with just to start off with. Vicky.
Oh, Vicky, sorry. Yeah, remember, is Vicky still alive?
No, Vicky died. Vicky died before Ralph. Though Ralph was the one that was sick and she was healthy and died just suddenly. So that was clear. And Mario was married just for a short while, and had the child, and that he never married again.
And he lived upstairs in your mom's crappy house for the better part of his life.
Yeah, he was away for that short time that he was married, but then he came right back, and he was with my mother to the end, till 83. Yeah,
that's a sort of sad, lonely.
Yeah.
Did you guys talk much or have much in common? It didn't seem like you had much in common with him.
No, not at all with either one of them, really. Ralph more later on. No, Mario. Mario was crippled and was born. Both he and I were born with club feet, but his was a severe, severe case of it. He was quite crippled. He wore a shoe with high shoe and
the brace on it.
Yeah.
And was he, what did he do for a living?
The Baldwin's locomotive factory was where almost most of the mail, I don't know how it's where it started, but all began to filter into that factory. It wasn't in Philadelphia. It was in Chester, about 15 miles, Eddystone, I think. It was a little town. And they all seemed to end up there. All the people in the block, Paisans, the mails ended up in them. And then Mario became a crane operator on what they call the roof, slides along.
Gantry crane.
Yeah, along the roof. And he did that. He did that for a lot of years.
Give it up
years.
For the H-Man with the gantry call there, please. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, come on. I threw out gantry. We drove it. I didn't know we drove it, but I know what kind of crane you're talking about.
This is amazing.
Thank you. Huel knows. Mm-hmm. So now you left Philadelphia, and you essentially really didn't see your brothers or your mom too much after that, right?
No. I mean, when I would go back, and there would be phone calls, but no. And Mario, I never heard from him, never called. He just never...
What do you think he would have said? Screw that guy, thinks he's all hot stuff, moving to California? Or was it just like, who cares?
Who cares? Mario was like in his own world. He's a strange little guy.
But how about your mom? Like, did you not... I know she was religious, and you guys didn't see eye to eye on probably a whole bunch of stuff, and she was from a different... generation, but it was almost like 1,000 years ago or something, right?
Yeah.
Didn't seem to be anything there.
No.
I mean, he would call her on, Christmas or birthday or something, but it didn't seem like, I got to see my mom.
No, my mother,
how did she screw that up?
Well, one thing I didn't think you were going to have any more children. So when I was born, it was really, I was trying to work out how to get rid of me, actually.
It seems counter. Brian over here, for instance, Brian's has a very tight knit group.
Italian family.
Oh yeah,
half Italian.
The sort of casualness that the three brothers and the mom, the dad passed away too early, but that. Sort of casualness that people had about the families is borderline bizarre. Like, just, I see him, if I don't. I mean, it seemed like 20 years would go by without anyone seeing anybody.
Well, it was really an alienation within the family. Let me just
you think your
give
mom
you
didn't want
that.
You?
Well, I think things really got bad between them. But let me give you a little background so you understand why. My father, the only male in this family of all these women, he was revered by them. There's nothing they wouldn't do with him. They brought him food. They would bring food for him and not the rest of the family. It was all to do with him. He was the...
That's the Italian sort of male
right.
syndrome.
Yeah. When they married, my mother, who lived in Chester, lived near that factory... I have that written on our family situation. We haven't talked about that. But then she came to live in that Sicilian block with all those sisters and who just revered him, and it was really hard for her. They treated him like a prince, and they treated her like she was not worthy of him. So that's part of the alienation.
Mm-hmm.
And that carried over to our family, and my mother... always said that you're just like your father. She was angry at me a lot. She took a lot out on me. She said, you look like him. You like music. You'll be a good for nothing the way he is. And, you end up not working the way he did.
All right.
So there was that.
Yeah. Yeah. Should have got Vince in the room at the same time. So she was going down that road. So there's no love lost there. Really? I mean, she was your mom, but really, you didn't feel the connection.
Yeah, later, I really felt sorry about it when I was, old enough or did enough little work on myself to see things. I was annoyed. I didn't like the way she treated me. Anyway, but later on, I really see the life she lived and the predicament she was in.
She had a horrible, miserable life,
she
right?
She really worked in sweatshops all her life. It's really, really, I mean, she kept the family together, you know, for a man that really wasn't and had all these sisters around him saying how wonderful he was. And she was saying, well, what the hell are you talking about? He won't even support the family.
Right.
You know, you think he's so good.
So when he died, it wasn't really much of a financial blow to the family.
No, not at all. For the folks that don't know, he was killed in a one-nighter. He died in a one-nighter. We both did a one-nighter together. I was in one
playing music,
playing,
by the way.
Yeah, playing
people
music.
Understand that.
Yeah, that's right. They wouldn't know what a one-nighter is. And anyway, we both met at the corner. I went with a young band, with young jazz players, and he went with an older group, and they were going out to one of the biggest field hospitals and at that time. I wish I can think of
during the war.
Valley Forge. Mm-hmm. Valley Forge, a large surgical medical division there. And on the way, on a winter night, his van turned over. He was the only musician killed, and I went on my one-nighter. And in fact, at the end of that, what came back is that James Carolla died in this automobile accident. Now, the first impression was, I thought it was me that I died. Now, there were two James Carollas, and I was, you know, a young kid with a jazz band, you know, and he was, you know, with these mature men, so it would be that, you know, drugs or something, and I'm the one that died.
Right.
But they wait for me to come home, and one of us was going to come in that front door, either he was or I was. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank goodness you got through there. Think about the world and how it would have changed.
World Classics is brought to you by Tommy John. This Black Friday, celebrate softness season by stocking up on your favorite Tommy John underwear, loungewear, and pajamas, because when you start wearing Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. So shop their Black Friday sale right now and give the gift of comfort to everyone on your list, including yourself, with Tommy John men's and women's loungewear. With over 16 million pairs sold, giving the gift of Tommy John underwear and loungewear has become a holiday tradition for families all across the country. 98% of women and men love getting a gift from Tommy John. And that's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics, like super fanatic Giovanni.
I'm so fanatic, I'm going to find that 2% that weren't comfortable, and I'm going to convince them otherwise. Tommy John, the most comfortable loungewear, underwear, anything you can buy. Buy it for mom and dad. Buy it for the family. It's not weird.
Yeah, this holiday, make everyone in your family that much more comfortable with the gift of Tommy John loungewear, underwear, and bras. Plus, it's all backed by Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. And we have a great deal for you. Tell them, Gio.
During Tommy John's Black Friday sale, get 20% off site-wide plus free shipping at TommyJohn.com/classics. Get 20% off plus free shipping for a limited time only at TommyJohn.com/classics. Go right now to TommyJohn.com/classics. See site for details.
And that was Jim Carolla and Bald Brian back in 2010 for a Thanksgiving show. Now, I wonder if Adam had his dad on the show just to use that as an excuse. Like, Dad, we already spent Thanksgiving together. We're done. We came on the show.
No, I think he doubled up and actually had food with him that year.
What was great
and really interesting is the top of the show when he got to hear the drops. And he's like, all right, everybody always thinks you say, oh, hell yeah, Dad. You've never said hell yeah. Can you please confirm that? And then they go over that. That's one of my favorite parts.
That's one of my favorite drops because it totally does sound like his dad saying hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfect. So if you want to listen to the rest of that clip, make sure to tune in tomorrow to our Sunday episodes and you can hear it. All you have to do is subscribe to the Corolla Classics feed and make sure you get every Sunday episode that we do. Okay, so the next clip, this is from 2010, and this is Teresa Strasser doing the news, Brian Bishop's there, and then they're making fun of Jack Silver, who was the program director of the KLS Sex Show.
We played one portion of this before, which is just the part where they're mocking Jack Silver's closing bit. He had this, like, Three Stooges sound effects meets, like, drinking noises. Hey, everybody. It's very bad. And it was his closing comedic bit for the station, essentially, which is a perfect example of why maybe he was the wrong person to be running a comedy.
Yeah.
Morning show. Maybe not for him. And they go over that, of course, in this, but this is the full chunk of the first half of the episode. Eat All Teresa's News. It's Adam Carolla Show 345. Natasha Leggero, not in this portion. She'll be joining them tomorrow in the Sunday episodes. Make sure you subscribe, as Chris said. Teresa Strasser, Brian Bishop, June of 2010. Check it out.
Strasser in the news.
From the International News Center, next to Donnie's Mini Bikes, this is the news with Teresa Strasser.
Every time a celebrity gets interviewed by Martin Bashir, mm-hmm. doesn't go so well.
Mm-hmm. What happened this time?
Well, you know, he was the guy that interviewed Michael Jackson
sure.
and started prying about the little boys and the overnight guests.
Wait, you know what? You know why he gets away with a lot of stuff?
Why?
Because his face doesn't really move. Like, these guys... Now, here's what I'm saying. Not in a Botox-y kind
right.
of way.
Right, poker face.
But if you ever see these guys... ever see, like, good cops who interrogate teenagers who kill their girlfriends? They're like, look, we've all gotten a little pissed off at the old lady or one time yeah. or another, had a couple of beers and snapped. I know where you're coming from.
Sure, let me get you an orange soda.
Yeah. They don't do that thing where the guy goes, she was looking weird at me, so I backhanded her. What? You did what? Oh, dear Lord, no. Yeah. No. No, they just go. So Martin Bashir just sits there and he's like, so, Michael, oftentimes you sleep with young boys in your bed with you?
Maybe once or twice.
Mm, okay. All right, and those boys, but he'd never go, what? What the fuck? Where were their parents? Like, so you just, and before you know it, he'd do this sort of like, it's natural for a man to want to share his bed with others, yeah? And he just kind of get in this thing where he'd do a lot of head nodding and a lot, and they just kind of go like, oh, okay, this guy's cool. It's cool.
You're basically saying that his interview technique is much like the Wheeze's technique for getting women.
Oh.
You just nod and listen.
Diabolical.
Approvingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As if everything they're saying is great.
Yep.
And then you get either a really juicy interview or a boner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, think about it. Like, when you're doing an interview and, you know, if you have Jimmy Kimmel interviewing you, you're not going to get through the, yeah, I had these kids from the Make-A-Wish Foundation come and sleep over on my bed. You're not going to get a lot of head nodding and chin scratching and I know.
Not in the next room, in your bed.
Yeah, you're going to get that. And now you're going to shut down, right? You're going to go like, whoa, it only happened one time.
Hold on, you gave them wine?
Well,
you called it Jesus juice?
Right. Instead of, oh, tell me more about the Jesus juice.
Of course, yes.
Yes. Yeah, it makes everything so soothing and natural. Yeah.
But you'd think after the Michael Jackson thing, people would get wise to it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a little talk with Diddy for Nightline.
Wow, I was just thinking about him the other day.
Diddy?
Yeah.
Because he was in Get Him to the Greek?
No, I was just thinking what a wild narcissist he is and how well it served him. Like how a guy who's has so much self-momentum that you just almost have to just stand back and get out of the way. Like, he puts his name on vodka, he produces, he can't sing yet, he's had a lot of top 10 songs, you know what I mean? He's just a crazed narcissist. Like, whenever he shows up on the set, or if they're filming him, he's always wearing Sean John clothing. Like, I mean, could you imagine wearing your own windbreaker around, essentially?
Yeah.
You imagine wearing a bomber jacket that said Bald Brian on the back of it, and you're Bald Brian? It's fucked up.
I interviewed him. He was super charming.
Yes. I think he's one of these guys that brings nothing to the party, yet leaves with all the pussy and all the loot.
Well, speaking of pussy he's left with,
mm-mm.
he's got a few kids. When he was talking to Martin Bashir, he said that he enjoyed being a dad, but he admitted that it was the area that he did not consider himself most successful, citing that his kids deserved more of his personal time. Now, that started a series of questions about Diddy's parental discretion that made the hip-hop figure visibly annoyed at times.
Mm-hmm.
Bashir suggested that Diddy was setting a bad example as a role model by having six kids by multiple women.
What?
Diddy said, all my kids are taken care of.
Just keeping it real.
They all go to the best schools. Bashir quipped, but you don't live with them. Then Nightline aired footage of that VH1 show, My Super Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. I guess Diddy's son, Justin, was on.
Mm-hmm.
And in that episode, Diddy gives Justin, his 16-year-old, a, I hope I'm pronouncing this.
Maybach.
Yes. Worth.
I saw it.
More than 360 grand. Worth almost 400 grand.
How about the fact that I saw that fucking episode?
My head just exploded. What were you doing watching My Super Sweet 16? Well, that's officially the gayest thing you've ever done.
That's racist. You got to be Martin Bashir. Really, you're watching Sweet 16.
Was that? Oh, sorry. Was that right after you saw Sex in the City 2?
During.
Oh my God.
I was watching it on my phone.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And then an egg dropped.
I was plowing a guy in the ass while I was watching Super Sweet 16 on my phone while at the theater watching Sex and the City 2. Yeah.
Well, that's a lot to do at one time.
Mm-hmm. I was calling him a multitasker. Yeah, he bought his one. I mean, it's this thing. Well, so Bashir continued to...
He continued to press him and say, you know, do you think that was a good... a sensible lesson. And Diddy said, I feel the way I raise my children, you know, I don't have to explain to you or anybody else because nobody knows the way I raise my children. Apparently,
well,
even his
we
children.
We do. We have MTV.
Yeah, anyone who has VH1, and God knows you do.
Yeah.
You TiVo the My Super Sweet 16, that's, or you...
Isn't that MTV? The VH1.
VH1. So you just...
It was on, like, MTV 2 or something and then went over to? Eh, now we got to figure that out.
So you just happen to be watching it, or it's one of your programs?
I've seen it. Look, anything to get angry at my parents. And when I see these bitches and a-holes going, listen, I want to be lowered down via cable into a giant tank filled with dolphins, and then I want Aquaman to lift me out with sparklers coming out of my ass, and I just picture me going, hey, Dad, can I get a ride to Van Nuys? Nope.
Oh, great.
All righty.
Can I borrow the Maybach?
Nope. Maybach.
That was top
water. Can I have the keys to the Maybach?
So I can't help it. But yes, obviously, I've spoken in the past about judging, and we're not like doing any judging. Like, you know, look, you financially providing for your kid is a lot better than I'm sure your dad did for you in this community. But just because it's better doesn't mean it's right or good. Having multiple kids through multiple moms and you not physically being there is not a great way to raise any of the kids. And look, sorry to sound like Chuck Heston here, but this is, you know, here's the best. Man, woman, kids, stability under one roof.
It's I'm almost with you, but time. I don't mind two men or two women in a stable household raising a child they love.
Don't mind it either, but it's beneath man, woman.
Because it's more complicated for the kid. Now, that'll be different in 25 years.
No, it's just men provide something that women don't provide, and women provide a lot that men don't provide, and that's kind of, you know, nature knew what she was doing when she figured out the penis and the cunt.
Such a beautiful story. So you had to use a C word. I mean, I'm not against it, but right there,
no,
all places.
Look, I believe me,
that
I would
called her vagina or pussy.
I would have rather had two gay dads or two lesbian moms
than the parents we had, right?
No, I absolutely. All things being equal, male, female. Beside what society says and what the schoolmates say, just there are many things my wife provides that I cannot, and vice versa, although the list is a little bit shorter with me. But anyway, yeah, so Diddy got a little pissy when he started pushing.
Yeah, he went on to say that it's what I wanted to do. I can do whatever I want to do with my children, and you can't question me about it. Nobody can question me about what I do with my children. Why not?
Well, you can't question him about it. I think he just did.
Yeah.
Didn't he?
Well, he's saying he doesn't want to answer questions about it, and I guess he could afford it. But it's weird how withholding things from kids is seen as abusive, and child protective services will come in if you don't feed them or if you don't send them to school. But if you abuse a kid by spoiling them to this extent, it's off limits to complain about it. I mean, giving a kid a car worth $400,000, a kid that you don't live with,
yeah, I mean, the kid has a driver, too. It's tough to tell. if it's actually gave him the car, or I thought when I was watching it, studying it, my Super Sweet 16, I couldn't tell if he gave it to him or it was just kind of a stunt where he got it for him for a month or whatever it is. Either way, Diddy's kids will be fine. The real bigger picture is just black community having kids out of wedlock, moving on with the Johnny Appleseed mentality, and our society not really questioning it. And somehow the pinnacle of being a black dad, in the 80s it was Bill Cosby. Now you're just Chad Ochocinco, which is, well, you have a bunch of kids, but don't worry, you pay for them. Oh, well, I guess everything's awesome then. No, it's not. You're supposed to be there.
Do you think it's a status symbol that the kid has this expensive car? In other words, that it reflects on Diddy well in his mind?
I think Diddy feels like, I have a shitload of money, and the reason I have a shitload of money is because I'm abroad working all the time, and I can assuage some of my guilt by getting the kid a Maybach.
True.
And what's Chad Ochocinco's... Because I heard him, I was watching Dancing with the Stars, and like Michael Irvin was like, he is the best dad on the planet. And I was like, he is? And then I found out he had like a couple kids from a couple moms. And it was like one of these, again, glad you're financially supporting your offspring, but that still doesn't make it the number one pops of the world. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, duh, kids need more time than stuff. Everybody knows
I that. I am appalled that people, men, women, black, white, whatever, aren't more serious about their kids. Like, I've talked to people, like every guy who drives a town car or anybody who picks you up at the airport, you know, they'll tell you this story where it's like, I got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, love them to death. And, we're there. Or they're in Atlanta with their mom and you're in Boca Raton, you know? And it's like, well, I'm doing it. I got a charter fishing thing I also do out here on the weekends. And then they start talking about, yeah, I see them. Well, they'll come down, you know, on spring
Christmas,
break.
Christmas, couple
and
spring days. Break,
and I'll always send them some stuffed in, you know, stuffed animal in the mail. It's like, what? I really, this notion of, I'm a great pops. I just see my kid, you know, 3 times a year. It seems insane. I mean, forget about the kid. What about you? Like, I knew today I was gone all day, and then I knew I had a long night ahead of me. And Olga had the kids down at the mall running them in a circle, tiring them out. And I knew I had to cut out before the kids got home. And I called Olga, and I said, hey, bring the kids back. I want to get a little wrestle time with them before they go to bed, because I'm not going to be there to kiss them goodnight tonight. They're going to be in bed long before I get home tonight. And I wanted to wrestle with them. I didn't want a day to go by where I didn't have a little physical contact, you know, not
oh
sexual this time.
Right, not this
and,
time.
Yeah, thank you. Mark Paul Carr? Mark
Carr? John Mark Carr.
John Mark Carr. Yeah, I fucking know that guy. Oh. So I wanted to, like, have a day. I didn't want a day where they saw the nanny all day and they never saw
And it wasn't out of duty. It was because you genuinely wanted to have your wrestle time with them because it feels good to be a parent.
No, I was not out of duty. I took a shit later that day. No,
and then you
I
had to wipe Natalia.
I wanted... Yeah, it wasn't anything of like, oh, Christ, I got to go to work, but I really should see the kids or the old lady's going to get pissed off. No, I love them. Like, I wanted to see them. I wanted to handle them.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them laugh, and I wanted to tickle them. And I, you know, maybe it is narcissistic. Like, I don't want them to forget about me. I don't want a day to go by where they don't go, we didn't have some contact with Daddy. We didn't laugh it up with Daddy. I'm not the world's greatest dad, but it's kind of for me. So yeah. The notion of not seeing them for months on end or years on end seems so counterintuitive as a human being.
I wouldn't have understood that at all before I had a kid. I just would have thought, well, he's got to go, you know, work on the boat 3 months a year to pay for the family, whatever. But now, like, when I put the baby down at night, you know, I have him on my lap, and he falls asleep, and there's times I can't even wrench myself out of the chair to put him in his crib because
Sure.
It's like crack.
Vicodin kicked in.
No, he's like Vicodin. Oh, like, the smell of his little head, his soft... And he holds my hand with his tiny little hand.
I know. I assume judging by our parents, we'll get over it.
I know.
If the acorn didn't fall too far from the tree, I'm assuming that at some point I'll just wake up and go, who? I'm fully expecting my wife to come in one morning and go, Sonny's got the measles.
Who?
Who?
No, I mean, I'm saying
this. Oh, no,
take
it a step further. Who are you?
I'm saying
why are you in my bathroom?
You're hot.
Hey. Get over here, you.
Yeah, I know. In the same, you know, I'll wake up and then by 10, sometimes I'll think, when do you go to nursery school? So I can have guilt-free time off from you.
But you couldn't imagine going months without seeing your kids.
Here's what I spend a lot of time imagining, and this is kind of dark, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So when I was pregnant and thinking about having kids, I was terrified that I wouldn't attach to the child, because my mom was one of very few people that just doesn't attach to the... Mm-hmm. It's rare, but it happens. And I thought, what if I have this baby and I just don't love him the way people love their babies?
Sure.
But even like 6 months pregnant, I was already attached to the baby, but I was still kind of scared. And
you, by the way, replace attach with gay, and I went through the exact same thing with my son. That's horrifying.
Were worried about...
Petrified.
Petrified. But, I mean, are you out of the woods?
I'm not out of the bottom woods yet. I'm out of the gay woods. Still got another hill.
Okay, but now I have a problem that I never, ever suspected I would have.
What I call the backwoods.
Backwoods.
Yeah, sorry.
Now, I have the feeling everyone described that you'll love your child in a way you don't love anything else. But that makes me feel as though... like I'm playing poker at a table and the stakes are too high. Like I just want to be at the nickel slots.
Right.
And now I'm all of a sudden with the high rollers and the pot keeps getting bigger and I'm not committed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I got to get the fuck out of here because I can't afford this. Like I think a lot about something bad happening to the baby. And I think, well, I don't really know how I would continue. Like I'm playing at this table now. And by the way, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have this feeling towards this person. And it would be devastating beyond comprehension. Like, how'd I get into this? I was worried I wasn't going to be attached to him. Now I'm playing with money I don't have.
You're essentially saying there's a Fabergé egg with your heart inside of it, and for the rest of your life, you're going to have to watch a couple people play catch with it, back and forth, and back and forth. And if it ever drops and shatters into a million pieces, so will go your heart.
Does this go away? I mean, I keep wondering.
Hold on,
like,
that's powerful.
It was beautiful. I keep wondering. I talked to Lynette about it, and she said she has worries about the kids, like you know,
that's why
disappearing.
She was in Vegas for 3 days whooping.
She has some worries because she trusts you. What was she doing in Vegas for 3 days?
Fucking partying. I don't know. What do you do in Vegas?
Well, listen, it makes you a better parent if you have fun on your own and then come back and you're rejuvenated.
Yeah.
At least that's what she probably told you.
Okay.
I'm saying she has worries too, but I don't know if this is normal. I probably have it worse than most people, but I do spend an inordinate amount of time like really, really anxious. And I guess
let me suggest this in a semi-insulting way, although Teresa takes my semi-insulting prognosis and diagnosis of her situation quite well. Might I suggest that this may be narcissistic, in that even though it's all about the kid, it's really kind of all about you.
Would I be able to handle the
heartbreak? Would you be able to handle it if the kid got hit on his bicycle at age 9? Yeah, or whatever would happen to the kid, but it'd be more like how that would affect you.
Yeah, I'm already pretty... fragile. I'm not that fragile. I mean, I'm you know, sturdy enough to be a good mom, I think.
I think I have these thoughts as well. Like, you
Thank
think,
you.
Why expose your soft underbelly to society in the form of a child that if something horrible happened to this child, then you would be devastated? At a certain point, you have to just sort of sit back and rip a bong load and go, look, everyone fucking has kids and shit happens
on
occasion.
And most of the time, it's fine.
And when it's not, the people still go on.
Yeah, and I remembered when I first met my husband and we were like, you know, falling in love. I spent a lot of time thinking, oh my God, what if he gets in a car accident? I spent a lot of time thinking about his demise.
Sure.
So that's what I do when I love somebody. Yeah. I just concern myself with the... You know,
what if he fell into a vat of acid?
Like a Joker.
Like, what other things could happen? But, yeah. So that part is a little scary. But you're right. I think you... and by the way, I did have to have a bong load the other day because I think I mentioned this earlier. I had to smoke pot because I had... It was not a big deal at all, but I'm a rookie mom, and my kid was getting a tooth. The tooth was breaking through, and I didn't know what was happening. So in the middle of the night, he was crying, inconsolably crying, which had never happened, 45 minutes straight, just crying. And I thought, oh, my God, something's poking him. I'm going to take off all his clothes, and I'm freaking out. And then I think, well, obviously he has meningitis or something horrible. Oh, we're going to end up at the emergency room at Children's Hospital, and something horrible is going to happen. And then I immediately had the realization that, wow, I'm not sure how I will continue. I would not like to.
I would.
And then I said, after he went down, I looked at my husband 3:30 in the morning and said, "Dude, do you have any pot? Because I don't. It wasn't a bong, but I want to say rip a bong load because it sounds cool. That's what you say,
right?
But what do you call when you smoke a pipe? Like just take a hit.
It's called getting high.
Yeah, and I had to take a rip. Thank you. Just one rip, like to get right.
Yeah. To get your head right.
I couldn't get right.
Wow.
Yeah. It worked.
Good.
But I'm thinking like in a couple years or maybe in a few months, you just get used to the idea that you have the Fabergé egg and you just move on.
Yes, you do.
God, I'm sorry for that long and...
It's all right. We'll edit that.
can you cut that out for the show? Listeners, I'm very, very sorry. Khloe Kardashian is an idiot. Mm. In a radio interview, she said... The rumor circulating about her being pregnant caused her to take a home pregnancy test. Quote, "I'm so nuts that I went out and got a pregnancy test. I was like, what if they know something that I don't? That's how confused I got. I was like, I don't want to lie, so let me figure this out."
Mm. She
was not pregnant.
But. Yeah, I think the Kardashians sort of... I think it's everything that's wrong with this country sort of... all just put inside of one reality show. Somehow, like, first off, you got Robert Kardashian, who's just sitting there trying to get OJ to be a free man, and then the crazed look on his face. There's nothing better than Kardashian's look when he hears the Ito go free. He's a free man, or when he hears the chick who read the jury, you know, how say you part. So you got the dad, and then...
Freed
then,
a double murderer.
Then freed, or helped, at least, and then he died semi-recently. And then you have this whole weird Bruce Jenner part of it, which went from the world's greatest athlete to the world's greatest stepmom. Yes, I knew what I was saying.
Yeah.
And then you have the kids that... I mean, it's pretty much about selling their sexuality, and the mom is right there every step of the way. Like, she's like saying, well... Odom doesn't want to buy me. Lamar Odom doesn't want to buy. He doesn't want to spend $8 million for a house. He only wants to spend $5 million for a house. And mom is telling his daughter, like, "Yeah, get in the bathtub, put some rose petals in there. You'll get it out of him tonight. Like, basically, you suck a big enough black dick, and you will get the house you want." And thank you. And it's just kind of, the whole thing is like intrusive and weird and sexual and intimate. And the whole reason we know Kim Kardashian is because she did the bootleg porn movie that I guess now sort of seems like she was okay with that coming out.
Well, how do you explain the whole Kardashian phenomenon to either an alien or someone from the future?
Bruce Jenner from 1972.
Yeah, how do you go, "Dude, you're a great athlete. Here's what's going to happen."
Yeah, let me show you the future. Hey, you Wheaties boy, let famous. Me bring you down to earth here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to own Wheaties in 10 years?
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, everyone's just on display now, and who gives a shit and whatever. I assume most all of it is just cooked up anyway. But I always just sort of question the parents. I really do. I just kind of think, like, what the fuck? Bruce... He's just gotta want to get out of this. All right, you got another one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a story about some swingers. Mm-hmm. Seems like it's going to be hot. Mm-hmm. They have had 300 wild sex parties during the course of their marriage, and they're still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
They're in their 70s.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been dubbed Britain's Britain's oldest swingers. They say their appetite for no-string sex is only increased with age,
yeah,
and they attend at least one swingers event per month.
No strings to me means no one on their period.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you don't pop any champagne corks, you know, when you're swinging.
Yeah.
Not to mention the carpet, the beating the carpet takes. You know, even in a light day.
And by the way, no swinger has hardwood floors.
No, there's not a pergo, not a fucking square foot of pergo between them. No, it's all bad 70 shag.
Ian and Jean Smith have 4 thoroughly embarrassed children.
Ugh.
And 8 grandchildren.
Yeesh.
Guess that's the key in a bowl to a healthy marriage.
Doesn't it make you happy, though, when people like this find each other early in life and they can spend 40-something happy years together as opposed to, you know, freaking out their partner somewhere down the road and getting a divorce? They're happy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, you can't judge. I'm sure they're both abused terribly. How do you get that audience going? I mean, like, how do you get people coming out to your pad to swing once you hit your 70s?
That's a tough putt.
Yeah, yeah. Balls dragging on the ground while you're answering the door.
Gray pubes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, hold on. Let me crack some Ensure. I drink an Ensure and Stoli.
Ensuratini?
Yeah, you want Ensuratini?
You have some sangria.
It's vanilla Ensure, a little bit of vermouth, and one shot of Kettle One.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah, and a multivitamin floater.
But, you know, how about something for fiber? Because the oldsters need fiber.
It's a Mucilix. It's a teaspoon of Mucilix. It's one crushed Viagra. And,
ooh.
Mm-hmm, and some strained peas.
This is actually not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because why should old people not have sex? And this cocktail gives them all the things they'll need.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Energy, mm-hmm, boner.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Fiber.
Sure.
Cocktail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably Viagra has raised the average age of the swinger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it used to be like the NFL. You know, once you hit your mid-30s, you had to bow out.
You leave the game.
Or you could get hurt.
Yeah, now.
Plus, it's sad, you know, seeing a guy laboring out there, balls dragging.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? It's sad. He's over his prime.
Yeah, you remember who he once was.
Yeah. Sure, he's going to the Swingers Hall of Fame. It's just sad to see him go out this way.
In another uniform.
Yeah.
This might be a surprise to you, but I'm not sure that even youthful swingers are that attractive.
Usually not. No.
Just a guess.
Yeah.
But based on the documentaries I've seen,
yeah,
and the Bruno movie.
I had a real sex waiting for me in the TiVo queue the other day.
And it was a rerun.
And I don't know what it was, but it was like it's just more, you know, fat chicks who are into fucking bondage from Germany and horrible looking swingers. And like, ugh. Does a gay guy produce that show? Like, who decided it can? It's called Real Sex. It's an hour worth of naked people on unbridled,
in the
by
forest.
The way. And you cannot beat off to it.
In the woods.
Yeah.
I honestly think a hotter show is Hookers on the Point.
Much easier to beat off to that.
It's
World
true.
War II in color, I can beat off to faster than Real Sex. I have to find out. There's got to be a gay guy behind this.
There must be, because you think it's called Real Sex. This is going to be pornish.
And could one story be about a, you know, 19-year-old runaway loves blowing guys? I mean, they all have to just be about fucking weird fat fetish porn?
How about a 6-part series on how one young woman got into porn? You follow her to
yes.
set up her first movie, and then you go home with her and you
I
see what
just
life
beat
is like.
Off, yes.
See, it's easy.
Yes. All right. T, you want to take some phone calls?
Yeah, that was the
all
news.
Right, let's bring it home.
Teresa Strasser and the news. Fuck you, CNN.
Somebody's on the phone has a very tantalizing call. Something that's haunted me for many a year. Tim?
Hey, Adam.
What's going on, Tim?
Not much. I was just calling because today I was thinking about your guys' last show at Terrestrial Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part of the entire day was that awesome comedy bit Jack Silver put together. You know, where he was drinking all those shots. I was hoping if you guys could break it down for me and exactly tell me where the comedy was in that.
Well, Now, Jack Silver was our program director over at KLSX for the 3+ years we were on the station. And I would say this about Jack. I like Jack personally.
What?
Yeah, he was a nice enough guy.
He was a nice enough guy, but his comedic sensibility did not bode with mine or jibe with mine or anybody I knew, by the way, who had a sense of humor. So Jack was constantly... Jack had his idea of what a morning radio should sound like, and it was forged in the crucible of Rick Dees circa 1988. And I just thought I didn't want to do that kind of show. And to be fair to Jack, he did what I say all executives do, which is if you took a beaver and you put him on the roof of the Sears Tower, they would start looking for wood so they could build a dam. And if you said to him, hey, you're 133 stories off the ground, what do you think, what are you building this dam for? He'd go, I'm looking for wood, get out of the way.
I'm a beaver, like, that's what I do.
That's what I do. And program directors and television executives, they're all just beavers. Some are better at it, at dam building than others.
Yeah.
But if you're not in a river, you sure as fuck don't need a dam. And that's, they do what they do. Like Jack Silver did what
yes,
he does.
And to put it less creatively, when you have a hammer, all you see is a nail. And he had a hammer.
Right.
And that hammer was boobies.
Right.
And talk about drinking and take a lot of phone calls and do the wing bowl.
Right.
Hammer.
Well, as I've said many, many, many times, radio stations still give the timeout every 8 minutes when there's everyone has a cell phone, everyone has a radio. I mean, think about this. I know I've broken this game film down, but there was a time when the time was a commodity. They'd put it on bank signs. And you'd be driving down the boulevard, and you'd go, hey, what time is it? Like, you wouldn't know because there wasn't one in your...
You'd have to pull over and ask somebody.
Yeah, there wasn't one in your clock radio, and there wasn't one... Or there wasn't one in your car radio, and there wasn't one in your oven, there wasn't one in your coffee maker, there wasn't one in your microwave, there wasn't one in your cell phone, there wasn't one everywhere. Well, now, they're everywhere. And if you notice, banks no longer put signs in front of their banks to tell you what time it is because they realize it's a waste of money. Why are people going to look at our sign when they have the time in their car? But radio stations, what do? They give the fucking time out, I would say, more now than they did in 1951. Why? They're beavers who build dams on skyscrapers. And give the time out is the exact same as... I'm looking for wood. Get out of the way.
That's what I do.
And you're fucking heretic if you say perhaps we don't need to look for wood on the top of the Sears Tower. All right.
Jack's bit.
When Jack came in, so when we did our final show at KLSX, I wanted to have here's my thing. You guys tell me if I'm, you know, overstating this. When a sitcom goes off the air, they try to wrap it up nicely, and there's lots of hugs amongst the cast members. But as a viewer, you don't have that feeling of, wow, what am I going to do with my day now? You know, I mean, it's like, okay, Seinfeld, good run. Whatever. Good, Frasier, good run. And maybe you feel there's a void, like, hey, man, I laughed at that show. But you don't feel like an emotional void. You feel a sort of an entertainment void.
Yeah.
But morning shows, radio personalities, not me and everyone else, there's an attachment. There's a bond that's made. And people feel it. You know, they felt it when I left Loveline. And it's not a moment to sort of, it's a moment to celebrate, but it's also a moment, it's a funeral of sorts. It's a passing. You're moving on. You're
Absolutely.
Burying this old show known as Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew, and you're burying this old show known as the Adam Carolla Show, and you're moving on. In my case, in Brian's case, Teresa's case, not too much.
To a total dearth of career opportunities.
You're moving on to disability. Yeah. Really what you're moving on to. But you're moving on, and I think we all felt that moment with the possibility of Dawson, who wanted to play a Robin Trower song.
Dude, that never happened.
You want to play an Alan Parsons song?
Lederhosen? Maybe two. Didn't I play one of my own?
You play a superset.
I think then you, yes.
wanted to, you played your you own, played and the then original. You wanted to play an Alan Parsons song.
Yeah.
All right.
I waited for you, man.
All right.
The point is this. People called with things that were like eulogies that celebrated their attachment to the show.
Right. And we all sort of spoke. It was a tear-filled sort of happy
I announced
memory.
I was pregnant.
You announced you're pregnant. I announced I was the father. Was people called in saying they're going to miss you, they're going to miss us in the morning, they're going to miss the show. And then Jack Silver, as the program director, was... And by the way, this was at the end of the show. This is, if memory serves, about 9:40, 9:30. I mean, this is at the end of a four-hour show. Jack Silver wants to come in as the program director and say a couple of words. At least that's the way I understood it. And I thought... It was going to be a, Teresa, I know we had a couple arguments in our office, but I want you to know I really respect you, and I think you're going to go on to great things. And, you know, Adam, we had a difference of opinion on occasion, but I think you're a funny guy, and there's always room for Paul Bryan. God forbid you get a tumor in 6 months. And I thought there'd be one of those, a slight burying of the hatchet with a, you know what, we had a pretty good run here, kids, and that kind of
thing. That would have been so appropriate because the tone had been set. I announced I was pregnant, and Joel McHale called in. A bunch of people called in saying how much they were going to miss the show.
Yes.
You know, it was kind of a tearful,
right.
emotionally charged.
But Jack had produced a bit.
Yeah.
For
he'd
this
gone
final,
into the studio.
He'd gone to the studio,
in
produced
the wee hours.
A bit for this final day on the air, and I believe we have that.
We do?
That's what I'm told.
Right. And as it turned out, you know, somehow I think Paul Bryan or Dawson or somebody brought a microphone into my last staff meeting yesterday. You got to hear this.
We now join FM Talk programming genius Jack Silver and his one last chance to celebrate me State of the Station brunch.
Boys, quiet, numbskulls. Now you all know that this is our last day of FM Talk.
Oh God, the room is spinning,
Schmendrick. Man up, Nancy.
Schmendrick.
Times are tough. No room for pansies on this bus.
Oh, sorry, boss.
Look, today we are here to celebrate 13 glorious years, nay, amazing years of FM Talk. So everybody raise a glass. I've got my tequila. Let's toast to Tom Likas. Now I've got a shot of Middleton, Irish whiskey, and let's raise a toast to Adam Carolla. Shot of Jägermeister for Frosty, Heidi, and Frank. Smooth. Hey, I got one. How about a shot of 151 for Conway and Whitman? Steckler. Malibu. I don't know. Down the hatch. Anybody for a kamikaze shot for the Bonaducci? Oh, that's a good one. How about you, Smiley? Let's do a Sambuca shot for the John and Jeff show. No?
Jack, well, I'm doing it. You might want to slow down a little bit.
Put a sock in it, Buttface. I have a feeling that I'm going to do one for Howard Stern. How about a sake bomb? Here we go. And finally, one for me, little Jackie Silver, the genie who created this FM Talk thing. Crap, I'm out. Anybody got a fresh bottle? Here we go.
Stay tuned for more. No, wait. There isn't any more. Okay, thus ends the tale of Jack Silver and the little FM talk station that could. Good night, Jack Silver, programming genius.
All yes, let's have a group hug. Nubby, nubby, nubby. Right there. Give it a nicky. Adam, as your people say, l'chaim.
He did that note too, by the way.
As you can tell, tonally.
It was tone deaf to the moment.
Not exactly what we're talking about, but then... As he was playing that, I did feel a sense of closure because I was like, no wonder this guy doesn't have any idea of what I'm trying to do or say.
I was confounded. In fact, I relate to caller Tim because I didn't know what to make of it. I thought, was this over my head or something, and I didn't get the joke?
Way under.
Caller Tim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Your guys' reaction right when you came back was great. I think Ace, you were like, okay, and then you guys went to commercial. That was awesome. I laughed my ass off on that because that is a piece of garbage. And I mean, that's not funny at any point.
Well, the part where it's not funny is the least of my worries, really. I mean, no program director's funny. They have a horrible sense of humor. That's how they got to be the creative engine behind a radio station.
Definitely not funny.
But to me, it's more that it was sort of out of touch and inappropriate. And I don't mean to overstate it, but I just mean we were having a real moment, and I think Jack did not want to participate in the gravity of the moment. So
yeah, or maybe he had recorded this in advance and kind of had to stick to it and didn't sense that the show had gone in a different direction that day.
Probably.
And it was so, you're right, it was towards the end.
Yes.
When I think we were running out, there were more people we wanted to talk to and we were running out of time. I can't remember, but there were people on hold. You know, I don't know if it was Dag, somebody like that. There were people that had been part of the show that we
Dawson
wanted to talk
had another Pat Travers song to play.
Right.
Those are good songs. Who's
I wanted
Pat
to do
Travers?
The alternate boom, boom, reprise of Bridge of Sighs.
Yeah.
Number two. No, actually, me and Lynch were sitting in the back office when Jack Silver played that, and both of us looked at each other and wanted to rip Silver's head off for bringing us into the bit.
Oh,
by saying, I think Dawson or Lynch had a microphone in there.
We
wanted
he
to
totally
distance ourselves from that as quick as possible.
No, I knew it wasn't you.
For the record, you were obviously not involved.
You never stayed a moment after work. So, I had like a shot.
Dawson worked actually really long hours.
I wouldn't know. I was out of there 10, 12.
Yeah.
I waited for you, man.
All right. Well, thanks, Tim. But it is nice, whether you're breaking up with someone or folding a radio station, to realize at the end, oh, this is why we're doing this.
Yeah,
I
can't restate enough. He was really nice in person. It was fun socializing with him at events. And God bless him, he's out of a job, too, selling ads somewhere.
I think he's got a gig somewhere.
Selling ads at K-Earth, but that's not like being a GM.
No, listen, I like Jack a lot, and I'd have a beer with Jack, but comedically, not what I was trying to accomplish.
I wish you weren't a liar.
The wing bowl was not something I was interested in performing.
No.
All right. Hey, thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
All right, and mahalo to you. But again, that's the beauty of what we're doing right now, and let me just take this moment to tell everyone that we've gotten the team back together, minus Jack and minus a few other folks that were able to tell us what to do because they paid us. And when someone pays you, they get to tell you what to do. Now, if you're a gardener, they get to tell you the mow of the lawn. And if you do talk radio, they get to kind of tell you what to say. And we no longer have that. That's the good part. The bad part is no one's paying us.
That is bad.
That's the downside. The good news is you guys can tell your friends, can spread the show around. We can be the first success in this economy and really in history that got shit canned from their radio job, got the band back together, turned to an alternative media, and had success. We are having success, but it's the beginning. And you guys don't have to pay a penny. Yeah, it'd be nice if you checked out our sponsors, went to the websites, and called the numbers and participated with that. But you can also just help by telling a friend or two. Some of you have said, hey, I would donate if you had a donation button on your website. We don't want that. We don't want charity. We want to be we're a company and not a charity. But if you feel like you're in the mood to give, how about giving one of your friends a call and saying, check the show out. I bet you'd enjoy
it. Subscribe on iTunes. And, you know, when you wake up, it'll be right there
for you.
Or go to AdamCarolla.com and listen and tell your friends. And I want to thank our listeners because they've been incredibly responsive when it comes to the advertisers.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
And
that's all we hear over and over again from you know, all the companies that manufacture butt plugs and plastic vaginas. All right.
And that was Teresa Strasser and Brian doing the news and talking about Jack Silver. And Jack Silver, one of Bald Brian's very few impressions.
Yeah, and pretty accurate. And we're running out of these old episodes from the Teresa era. I keep saying it, but we have so few left, and they're like little gems. And it's like, oh, we haven't played this portion. Let's put this on. And like these new stories and certain drops and references to stuff from the radio show, like John Mark Carr. He was the guy that admitted to killing JonBenet Ramsey, though he never met her, and then we extradited him from some foreign country and then proved he didn't do it. And he was in the news and the media quite a bit on the radio show days, and there's a clip of him at some like event playing the song I'm Falling, and he's singing with a falsetto and playing the acoustic guitar. It was one of Brian's signature drops, and it does not get played today. And in some of these episodes with Teresa and Brian Adam, it's so close to the radio show, we get to hear some of these leftover pieces.
I love it. And if I know we're running out of Teresa clips that we haven't played on this show, but she's still doing some pod. Make sure to check out our former news girl Teresa with our current news girl Gina Grad on Easy Listening. Now
I'm a subscriber and a patron.
Look at that. Okay, that will do it for part one of today's episode. Part two coming up next.